Good evening. This is Russ Werner, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona, and tonight's host of Sports Today, the one-hour-long show that airs every Tuesday and Thursday evening from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. right here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. This edition is for Tuesday, July 1st, 2025. We are going to start off tonight with some Major League Baseball news, starting with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Crowd boos as D-backs blow another late lead. This by Jose M. Romero of the Arizona Republic. Relief pitcher Jalen Beeks walked the bases loaded in the eighth inning and couldn't get the one out he needed to preserve a one-run lead. And the Miami Marlins scored five runs in the inning en route to a 6-4 victory Sunday, June 29th, and a sweep of the three-game series at Chase Field. The slumping Diamondbacks are back under 500 at 41-42. Beeks is 2-1, charged with three runs in an 8-7 loss the previous day, was rocked for five runs on two hits and four walks, one intentional, in two-thirds of an inning in the series finale. Diamondbacks manager Torey Lovullo said the crush of injuries was no excuse, but did talk about a failure to execute the fundamentals during his post-game conference with reporters. 10 walks in one game? You're never going to win those games, he said. That's unacceptable. Beeks and the Diamondbacks were loudly booed as the Marlins, who won their seventh straight game and swept an NL West team for the second consecutive series, made Beeks pay for his five passes. Otto Lopez drove in two with a single, and Kyle Stowers followed with a three-run double before Lovullo changed pitchers. What I saw there today was unacceptable, Lovullo said. We got to do better than that. That's ultimately on me, and we're going to figure this out. The Diamondbacks held a 2-1 lead after Ketel Marte's solo home run in the third inning and made it hold up until the eighth. In the meantime, their offense went dormant. The Diamondbacks did manage two runs in the bottom of the eighth when Jose Herrera scored on a wild pitch and Gerardo Perdomo scored on Eugenio Suarez's two-out single. But the Diamondbacks left two runners on base. In the top of the ninth, Diamondbacks catcher Herrera and Marlins hitter Jesus Sanchez went face-to-face at home plate, leading to both teams leaving their dugouts, but nothing came of the brief confrontation. We've just got to keep grinding, Lovullo said. We're gritty. We're the Arizona Diamondbacks, and this is a gritty state. We represent the state the best way we can. We got to find a way to get through this. Starter Eduardo Rodriguez pitched well again for the Diamondbacks, limiting Miami to a run on four hits with three walks and six strikeouts over five and a third innings and 108 pitches. In the rest of Major League Baseball from Sunday's roundup, Skubal Tigers overpower Twins. Tarik Skubal limited Minnesota to one hit in seven innings and tied his career high with 13 strikeouts as the host Detroit Tigers blanked the Twins 3-0 on Sunday night. Kerry Carpenter had a solo homer, an RBI triple before leaving the contest in the fifth due to a right hamstring tightness. Riley Green supplied a solo shot. Minnesota starter Chris Paddock, who's 3-7, gave up three runs and six hits with no walks and three strikeouts in 4 2/3 innings. We have Pirates 12, Mets 1. O'Neill Cruz hit two home runs and had four RBIs. Henry Davis had four hits, and the host Pittsburgh Pirates completed a three-game sweep of the New York Mets. Ke'Bryan Hayes continued his torrid hitting with three more hits and two RBIs as the Pirates recorded their first sweep over the Mets since August 14th through the 16th of 2015. It was just their second series sweep of the season. Luis Torrens and Jeff McNeil each had two hits to lead the Mets offensively, while Brandon Nimmo and Tyrone Taylor each had a double. Now we have Reds 3, Padres 2. Will Benson laced a walk-off RBI single to right field in a two-run ninth inning to give the Cincinnati Reds a victory over the visiting San Diego Padres. With the Reds trailing 2-1 entering the ninth against Padres closer Robert Suarez, who's 2-4, Ely De La Cruz singled to third base before Suarez got Austin Hayes to fly out. Gavin Lux walked, leading to Spencer Steer's game-tying single to center. Jose Trevino singled to load the bases, setting up Benson's game-winner to help the Reds take the weekend series for their fifth victory in the past seven games. Now we have Nationals 7, Angels 4 in 11 innings. Drew Miles' tie-breaking RBI double in the 11th inning helped the Washington Nationals secure a comeback victory over the Los Angeles Angels in Anaheim, California. With automatic runner Brady House starting on second base, Millis followed Daylen Lyles' single with a double to left to make it 5-4. One out later, C.J. Adams, who had two hits and three RBIs, drilled a two-run triple to write off losing pitcher Connor Brogdon, who was 1-1. The Angels broke a 3-3 tie in the seventh when Luis Rengifo hit a one-out triple to right field and scored on Jose Ferrer's wild pitch with Taylor Ward, who had three hits at the plate. Now we have Phillies 2, Braves 1. Philadelphia's Ranger Suarez pitched seven strong innings to out-duel Atlanta's Spencer Strider and lead the Phillies to a road victory over the Braves in the rubber game of their three-game series. Suarez, who's 7-2 on the year, allowed one run on four hits with one walk and eight strikeouts to lower his ERA to 2.00. It was the ninth time in 11 starts that Suarez has allowed two or fewer runs. Suarez also recorded his 10th straight quality start. Strider, at 3-6, saw his three-start winning streak come to an end. He pitched seven innings and gave up two runs on five hits with three walks and four strikeouts. We already talked about the Marlins 6 and Diamondbacks 4, so we'll move on to the Mariners 6, Rangers 4 in 12 innings. Donovan Solano's groundout in the 12th inning drove in the go-ahead run, and Mitch Garver followed with a two-run homer as the Seattle Mariners outlasted the Texas Rangers to clinch a three-game series in Arlington, Texas. Solano and Garver's heroics off Texas reliever Cole Wynn, who's 0-1, capped a contest in which the teams combined to go 8-for-31 with runners in scoring position. Trent Thornton, who's 2-0, pitched the final two innings, allowing one run and two walks and striking out two. Garver had three hits and four RBI for Seattle on Sunday to lead its 13-hit attack. Evan Carter went 3-for-4 with a double to lead Texas, which had nine hits. Now we have Rockies 4, Brewers 3 in 11 innings. A lot of extra inning games here. Kyle Farmer's RBI single in the 11th inning lifted the Colorado Rockies to a victory over the Milwaukee Brewers that also snapped the visiting club's five-game losing streak. Colorado trailed 2-0 after six innings, but plated one run in each of the last four frames to notch its 13th comeback victory of the season. The Rockies were down to their last out in the ninth when Orlando Arcia homered to left center field off Brewers closer Trevor Miguel. Farmer, who entered as a pinch hitter in the seventh, went 2-for-3 and got the game-winning single off Grant Anderson, who's 1-3 on the season. Thairo Estrada went 3-for-5 with an RBI single in the 10th inning. Now Cardinals 7, Guardians nothing. Nolan Gorman and Victor Scott II each hit a home run as the visiting St. Louis Cardinals threw a combined three-hitter to complete their first sweep of the Cleveland Guardians. Matthew Liberatore, who's 6-6, pitched six-plus innings, allowing three hits and five walks for his career-high third straight victory. The left-hander struck out five to help St. Louis win its sixth in a row on the road. Gorman hit a three-run homer in the first against Logan Allen, who's 5-6 on the season, and Scott had a two-run blast off Hunter Gaddis in the seventh. Gorman scored twice and stole his first base of the year. Now Dodgers 5, Royals 1. Justin Robleski threw six shutout innings in a bulk roll out of the bullpen, while Enrique Hernandez and Will Smith each homered as the visiting Los Angeles Dodgers beat the Kansas City Royals. after opener Lou Trevino allowed a run on the first two Kansas City batters of the game. Robleski, who's 4-2, came on in the second inning and yielded three hits with a walk and struck out six until Kirby Yates took over in the eighth. Chris Bibick, who's 6-6, allowed two runs, two walks, and three hits in Fan 5 while laboring through 90 pitches over five innings for Kansas City, which has dropped seven of the last eight overall and went 1-12 at home in the month of June. Now White Sox 5, Giants 2. Kyle Teal went 3-for-4 with two RBIs, and the Chicago White Sox took the three-game series against the visiting San Francisco Giants. White Sox starter Jonathan Cannon, out since June 3rd because of a back strain, gave up one run on three hits, walked three, and struck out four in three innings in his return. Justin Verlander was effective through six frames, with one run on five hits and two walks. He fanned three for the Giants, who have dropped 5 of 6. Then we have Astros 2, Cubs nothing. Framber Valdez produced his fourth scoreless start of the season, and Jose Altuve homered with two outs in the bottom of the fifth inning as the host Houston Astros claimed the rubber match of a three-game interleague series with the Chicago Cubs. Valdez, who's 9-4 on the season, recorded his second consecutive scoreless start and eighth straight winning decision. He pitched into the seventh inning, allowing five hits and two walks with six strikeouts. His strikeout of Carson Kelly in the fourth moved him into 10th place in club history with 974. Valdez surrendered a one-out double to Kyle Tucker in the top of the first inning, but rallied to retire six consecutive batters. John Berti singled with one out in the third and subsequently stole second base, but Valdez closed that inning by inducing a pair of groundouts. Now Yankees 12, Athletics 5. Aaron Judge homered twice and drove in four runs, while Jazz Chisholm Jr. homered and also drove in four, as the host New York Yankees rocked Luis Severino to beat the Athletics. Chisholm homered in his first at-bat in the second, and then ripped a bases-clearing triple in the third to post four RBIs for the third time this season. Chisholm also appeared to injure his hand on a check swing strikeout in the sixth, but finished the game. Severino, who's 2-9, was rocked by the Yankees for the second time as he allowed seven runs, six were earned, on five hits in a season-low 3 2/3 innings. Next is Blue Jays 5, Red Sox 3. Edison Barger and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. each hit a solo home run to propel the visiting Toronto Blue Jays to a victory over the Boston Red Sox. The home runs came back-to-back in the top of the first against Walker Buehler. It was Barger's 9th home run of the season and number 12 for Guerrero. Carlos Navarez hit his 7th home run for Boston, which has lost 7 of its last 8 games. The Red Sox received two hits from rookie Roman Anthony, who has 5 hits in his last 2 games. And finally, it's Orioles 5, Rays 1. Dean Kramer threw 7 shutout innings, and the Baltimore Orioles, after giving up 19 total runs in the first 2 games of the series, won the rubber match by defeating the visiting Tampa Bay Rays. Raymond Laureano and Gary Sanchez both had 2 hits for the Orioles, who won for only the 3rd time in their last 8 games. The Rays rarely threatened, going 0-for-3 with runners in scoring position. Tampa Bay starter Taj Bradley, who's 5-6 on the season, took the loss, charged with 5 runs on 8 hits in 5 1/3 innings. Bradley struck out 2 and issued 1 walk. And in a side article from Major League Baseball, rolling the dice. Rob Manfred, confident A's move to Las Vegas, a good bet for MLB. This is by Mick Akers of the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred initially gave the Athletics approval to explore a relocation in 2021, especially in the Las Vegas area. MLB was eyeing Las Vegas for some time in relation to adding a team in the blossoming professional sports market, Manfred told the Review Journal. The sport the area has shown its pro sports teams and the demographics of the area, including the robust tourism the city is known for, piqued the league's interest. With the A's failing to land a new stadium in the Bay Area, Manfred is pleased with how the Las Vegas process has played out the past 4 years and was one of the happiest attendees at the team's recent stadium groundbreaking ceremony. Manfred talked about arriving at the milestone day and why the league is bullish on the A's move to Las Vegas. The Review Journal asks, "This event is 4 years in the making since MLB gave the A's approval to explore relocation. What's it like to see this happening in Las Vegas?" Manfred's reply, "It's just exciting to see the construction actually start. I never had a doubt that it was going to happen, but it's always nice to see the beginning." Review Journal, "There are still people doubting that the stadium will be built, even though work is being done on the site. What's the message to them?" Manfred says, "John Fisher, the A's owner, has made a tremendous commitment to Las Vegas, to making it work here, starting with the governor. All the local officials have been unbelievably supportive of the project. I frankly don't understand why anyone would have a doubt." The Review Journal, "What excites you about Las Vegas as an MLB market?" Manfred's answer, "First of all, Vegas is a sports town. It's always been. The experience in hosting pro sports teams has been extremely positive here. And when you're here and you see all that goes on all the time, we're pretty confident that this is going to work great for us." The Review Journal, "A lot of people are talking about the investments the A's are looking to bring in. The MLB vetted some people who might put money into the project. Talk about the confidence of that occurring." Manfred's response, "I think that investing in a major league club right now is a great investment. I think our teams are undervalued in relation to teams in other sports. I think that this team may be a unique opportunity in a sense that come 2028, they are going to have a state-of-the-art facility in a brand new market that's proven itself to be supportive of professional sports teams." The Review Journal, "MLB already has a footprint in Las Vegas, previously hosting awards shows and meetings. Where do you see that growing as the stadium is completed?" Manfred's response, "For major events, for all-star games and things like that, one of the things that's always important is what the infrastructure is like and can you support a big event. Look around here, and we don't have much doubt that this is the case." Finally, RJ, "You mentioned the success of pro teams. What role did that play when you first gave the A's the go-ahead to explore relocation and the Las Vegas market?" Manfred's reply, "We've been looking at markets. We've been talking about expansion, and we thought the demographics here, the amount of tourism that comes through here all the time, we thought it created a great opportunity for baseball, whether it was relocation or expansion, and we're glad that we'll have a team here in 28. Now we'll move over to some basketball news with the NBA Phoenix Suns. More moves for the Suns is the question. Draft over, free agency coming up. This is by Daniel Scott of the Arizona Republic. The Phoenix Suns' main rebuild objectives for next year are to get younger, stay competitive, and cut costs from their disappointing league-high $400 million roster, which was far past the league's second tax apron last season. Since June 22nd, the Suns' new general manager, Brian Gregory, spearheaded five trades before and during the NBA draft on June 25th and 26th. That string of transactions began with sending the Suns' top scorer and future Hall of Famer Kevin Durant to the Houston Rockets. The Suns received two Houston starters in return, Jalen Green and Dylan Brooks, along with the number 10 overall pick and five future second-round picks. The Suns fulfilled their plan to add more front-court youth with that number 10 pick. They selected one of college basketball's top centers, 7'1" freshman Kamen Mielek, who helped lead Duke to this year's Final Four with the Dallas Mavericks' number one overall pick, Cooper Flagg. Also on the draft's first day, the Suns traded their number 29 pick, backup guard Vesa Micic, and a 2029 first-round pick to Charlotte for another big, Mark Williams. The next day, the Suns moved up from their number 52 and 59 picks by dealing them to Golden State for number 41, using it to draft Kentucky shooting guard Kobe Brea. They also acquired the number 31 pick from Minnesota for number 36 after they traded two future second-round picks to Brooklyn for that 36th pick. With that, they selected St. Joseph's big, Rashier Fleming. The NBA free agency period begins on Monday, June 30th, when teams can begin talking with players. July 6th is the first day deals can be made. Now here's a look at where the Suns' current roster of 11 players under contract stand ahead of the free agency period. We have Devin Booker, shooting guard, 6'6", salary for next season, $53.1 million, entering second of four-year, $220.4 million Supermax deal, eligible for a two-year, $150 million extension on July 6th. Bradley Beal, shooting guard, 6'4", salary for next season, $53,666,000. Entering fourth of five-year, $251 million deal, $57.1 million player option for the 26-27 season, but his contract has a no-trade clause. Grayson Allen, shooting guard at 6'4", salary for next season, $16,875,000. Entering the second of four-year, $70 million deal, $19,375,000 player option for the 27-28 season. Royce O'Neal, small forward at 6'4", salary for next season, $10.1 million, entering second of a four-year, $42 million deal. We have Nick Richards, center at 7 feet, salary for next season, $5 million, fully guaranteed on June 29th. Entering the final of a three-year, $15 million deal, becomes unrestricted free agent after next season. Then we have Ryan Dunn, small forward at 6'6", his next season salary, $2,657,000, entering the second of a four-year, $13 million rookie deal. Then we have Oso Iguodaro, center, 6'10", salary next season, $1,955,000, entering the second of a four-year, $7,895,000 rookie deal. Cody Martin is a wing, 6'5", salary for this season, $8.68 million, fully guaranteed on June 30th. He's entering the final of a four-year, $31.36 million deal, becomes unrestricted free agent next year. Jalen Green is shooting guard, 6'4". Salary next season, $33.3 million, entering the first of his three-year, $105.3 million deal with a player option for $36 million in 27-28. Dylan Brooks, a wing at 6'6", salary next season, $21.1 million. He's entering the third of a four-year, $86 million deal. Mark Williams, center at 7 feet, salary next season, $6.2 million. He's entering the final year of a four-year, $18 million rookie deal. Now, free agents, players who were on the Suns roster last season that will be free agents this summer, Bol Bol, Tyus Jones, Mason Plumlee, Monte Morris, Damian Lee, Colin Gillespie, Ty Washington Jr., Jalen Bridges, Gillespie, Washington, and Bridges were on one-year, two-way contracts. And in the NBA notebook, several short articles here. Report, Beasley subject of gambling investigation. Detroit Pistons guard Malik Beasley is the subject of a gambling investigation by the United States District Attorney's Office, ESPN reported June 29th. ESPN reported that the allegations involve gambling related to NBA games and prop bets. That could complicate the Pistons' efforts to re-sign Beasley. ESPN reported that talks regarding a new three-year, $42 million contract for Beasley are now on hold. An investigation is not a charge, Beasley's attorney Steve Haney told ESPN. Malik is afforded the same right of the presumption of innocence as anyone else under the U.S. Constitution. As of now, he has not been charged with anything. Beasley, who's 28, just completed his 8th NBA season and first with Detroit. He averaged 16.3 points, 2.6 rebounds per game for the Pistons, who were eliminated by the New York Knicks in the first round of the playoffs. Next report, Timberwolves forward plans to sign new deal. All-star forward Julius Randle plans to sign a new contract with the Minnesota Timberwolves, ESPN reported. The deal is expected to be for 3 years and $100 million, according to the ESPN report. Randle originally signed a 4-year, $117 million contract extension in 2021 when he was with the New York Knicks. His player option for the 25-26 season is worth $30.9 million, and he had to decide by June 29th whether to exercise that option. Now Harden gets a new deal with the Clippers. James Harden declined his player option in order to sign a new 2-year contract with the Los Angeles Clippers worth $81.5 million, ESPN reported. The 11-time All-Star guard will return to the Clippers after spending the past 2 seasons there. The second year of the new pact reportedly has a player option and partial guarantees. Then Jazz land Nurkic in trade with the Hornets. The Utah Jazz are set to acquire center Yusuf Nurkic from the Charlotte Hornets for Colin Sexton and a 2030 second-round draft pick, ESPN reported. Nurkic, who's 30, averaged 8.9 points and 7.8 rebounds in 51 games last season with the Phoenix Suns and the Hornets. He was traded to Charlotte in February for Cody Martin and Vasily Micic. In 11 NBA seasons, Nurkic has averaged 11.8 points, 8.8 rebounds, and 2.5 assists in 590 games, 490 of them as a starter, for the Denver Nuggets 2014-17, Trailblazers 17-23, and the Suns 23-25, and now the Hornets. And in some WNBA action from the Phoenix Mercury from Sunday, Wilson aces halt Mercury 6-game win streak by Dana Scott of the Arizona Republic. The Phoenix Mercury lost to the Las Vegas Aces at Phoenix Arena on Sunday, June 29th, 84-81 to snap their winning streak at 6 games. Trailing 59-50 entering the fourth quarter, the Mercury put together a 17-3 run to take a 67-62 lead. The Aces battled back and took a 79-78 lead on a pair of Asia Wilson free throws, but the Mercury's Kalia Copper hit a three-pointer with 1:25 remaining in the fourth quarter. A layup by Jackie Young tied the game, and after Satu Sabali missed a long three-point attempt, Wilson hit a driving layup for an 83-81 Las Vegas lead. Phoenix's Sammy Whitcomb missed a three, and Aces' Alaya Nye hit one of 2 free throws. Whitcomb's last-second three-point try missed, and the Mercury fell for the first time in 7 games. Alyssa Thomas led the way for the Mercury, scoring 16 points on 50% shooting, dishing a team-high 8 assists, and grabbing 7 rebounds. Copper contributed 15 points and 6 boards, and Sabali had 10 points and 9 rebounds. The WNBA's reigning MVP, Wilson, had a game-high 26 points and 18 rebounds for the Aces, who are 8-8. The Mercury, who are 12-5, maintained their hold on second place in the WNBA standings. The third-place New York Liberty at 11-5 lost in Atlanta to the Dream earlier in the day. The Mercury play next at the WNBA's 12th-place Dallas Wings, who are 5-13, on July 3rd at 5 p.m. And in a side article, Phoenix honors Cloud before game against Liberty. This is by Roman Aguilar of the Arizona Republic. Prior to tip-off between the Phoenix Mercury and the New York Liberty on Friday, June 27th, at Phoenix Arena, former Phoenix player Natasha Cloud was honored with a tribute. Cloud waved to the crowd as the words, "Thank you, Tosh," lit up the screen. She was greeted with loud cheers from the Phoenix crowd. Friday marked Clouds' first game back in Phoenix since being traded, twice in 1 month before the start of the season. After signing a 2-year deal with the Mercury in 2024, the 10-year veteran was dealt to Connecticut as part of the trade that brought Alyssa Thomas to Phoenix. She then was rerouted to New York in exchange for 2 first-round picks. Cloud landed in a Liberty system that quickly unlocked the best basketball of her career, joining the team a season after New York won the WNBA title. She earned Eastern Conference Player of the Week honors in May and has become a vocal leader on the court and in the locker room. Last season in Phoenix, she led the team in assists with nearly 7 a game. She leads the Liberty in that same category this season, averaging 6.5 assists in a game, along with 8.4 points. Cloud finished with 14 points, 7 assists, and 4 rebounds in New York's 106-91 loss to Phoenix on Friday. That was the Mercury's 6th straight win. And that will put us a little bit past our halfway point in this evening's sports today. Now on to some PGA Tour golf news. Poeltgeiter gets first PGA Tour win in the playoff. This is by Matthew Achincloss of the Detroit Free Press. The Rocket Classic has a new champion after its third playoff in 7 years of the event. Aldrich Poeltgeiter defeated Max Gracerman and Chris Kirk in extra holes Sunday evening at Detroit Golf Club for his first win on the PGA Tour. It took more than an hour of playoff golf to decide the winner, 5 extra holes until Poeltgeiter, a 20-year-old South African in his 20th start on the tour, poured in a 17-foot, 10-inch putt on the 158-yard par 3 15th to win at 22-under. In celebration, Poeltgeiter hugged his father and threw the winning ball into the crowd, a fact that he is sure will displease his grandmother. "I give her all my stuff that I've won with, so she's not going to be pretty happy," Poeltgeiter said. Poeltgeiter's victory earns him a spot in the 2026 Masters and makes him exempt on tour through 2027. He also gets automatic entry into the 2026 Players' Championship and the 2026 PGA Championship and an exemption at the 2026 Century in Hawaii. He earns $1.728 million of the $9.6 million purse, more than he has earned in winnings across his career thus far. Despite entering the day with a 2-shot lead, Poeltgeiter quickly fell down the leaderboard as he shot 1 over through the first 5 holes, including taking an unplayable lie on number 2 for a bogey. His luck began to turn when he hit 2 birdies in numbers 7 and 8. The back 9 went more smoothly. The front 9 and the back 9 definitely played different with the wind, which we had yesterday and today, Poeltgeiter said. So it was definitely nice to get that birdie with 7 and 8, knowing that you're going into the back 9, where you've got some good opportunities that's going to suit my game. Gracerman and Kirk, the co-leader after 2 rounds, each shot a final round 5-under 67 to catch Poeltgeiter, who shot 69, to force extra holes with the trio at 22-under par 266. Birdies on 13, 14, and 17 brought Poeltgeiter back in line. All 3 failed to birdie the 470-yard par 4 18th, though Kirk and Gracerman both had short putts to do so, setting up the playoff, which began on number 18, to an identical result, with Kirk missing a 9-footer. Kirk bowed out after the second playoff hole, missing a 3-foot, 9-inch par putt on number 15. Poeltgeiter got up and down from the rough behind the flag, holing a 6-foot par putt after Gracerman missed an 11-foot birdie putt for the win. The two continued to battle through numbers 16 and 14. Both broke even on the par 4 16th, with Gracerman 30 grazing the cup from 16 feet, and Poeltgeiter missing wide right from 15.5 feet after a beautiful fairway bunker shot. On the par 5 14th, Poeltgeiter barely missed the lip of the cup for a would-be winning eagle on a 19-foot putt, Both settle for birdie on the hole before resuming play on 15. Poeltgeiter, the youngest player on tour as a 20-year-old South African, entered the final round with a two-shot lead and shot 3-under par 69. He shot a then-course record 62 in Thursday's first round, which put him at the top of the leaderboard for much of the tournament. Poeltgeiter's biggest strength is his driving. He leads the tour in driving distance this season at 326.6 yards, which is 6 yards longer than number two, Rory McIlroy. Poeltgeiter is 26 yards longer than the tour average. Detroit still owns the longest playoff in tour history, 11 playoff holes at the 1949 Motor City Open, which ended in a tie between Kerry Middlecoff and Lloyd Mangrum. Cam Davis in 2021 and Ricky Fowler in 2023 won the other two Rocket three-man playoffs, with Davis winning in 5 holes on number 15 and Fowler winning on number 18, the first playoff hole. Michael Thoberson and Jake Knapp, who shot a Detroit Golf Club record 61 on Friday, tied for fourth this year at 21 under. Colin Morikawa, the top-ranked player in the field at number 5 in the world, and making his second start in Detroit, finished tied for 8th at 19 under after shooting 4 under 68 on Sunday. He lost as part of the playoff to Fowler in 2023. Next year's 2026 Rocket Classic moves back to July 30th through August 2nd to be played 2 weeks after the season's final major, the Open Championship at Royal Birkdale. The new date also gives Detroit Golf Club more time to finish its $16 million renovation, led by architect Tyler Ray, set to begin immediately on Monday, June 30th. In some other golf news on the PGA Tour champions, Harrington wins second U.S. Senior Open in 4 years. Ireland's Padraig Harrington parlayed 4 front-9 birdies Sunday into a steady back-9 play that resulted in a one-shot victory at the U.S. Senior Open at Broadmoor Golf Club in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Harrington fired a 3-under par 67 to assure a single-stroke victory at 11-under 269 over runner-up Stuart Sink. It was his first win on the PGA Tour Champions in 2025 after previously tying for second at the Senior PGA Championship in May. The win was Harrington's second in 4 years at this event, however, after previously winning in 2022. He credited his comfort level on the course with helping him prevail late. In LIV golf, Reed wins in playoff in Texas. Native Texan Patrick Reed sank a 10-foot putt to make birdie on a playoff hole Sunday, claiming his first LIV victory and first tournament victory in his home state at the LIV Golf Dallas in Carlton, Texas. Reed, a product of San Antonio, came into the day with a 3-shot advantage at Merido Golf Club. He didn't do himself many favors in trying to wrap up the win until that huge birdie late, as Reed suffered through 5 bogeys over his first 9 holes on the way to a 3-over-par 75. To his credit, Reed, who's 34, did manage 2 birdies among his rocky front 9 at 1 and 7, and then he stabilized shooting par over the final 9 to give himself an opportunity to pull it off in the playoff, which he did. And over at the LPGA, Somi Lee, Jin-hee Im won Dow Championship. The Korean duo of Somi Lee and Jin-hee Im prevailed in a playoff over Lexi Thompson and Megan Hang to capture the Dow Championship title on Sunday at Midland, Michigan Country Club. The teams replayed the par 3 18th to begin the playoff. Thompson got her team closer than Lee off the tee, but Im rolled in an 8-foot birdie putt and Hang missed her team's 5-footer to the left. Lee and Im birdied the 17th hole and parred the 18th to tie Hang and Thompson at 20-under par 260 and force a playoff. Hang and Thompson fired a 10-under 60 earlier in the day, and Lee and Im posted a 62. The final round deployed a 4-ball best ball format before the playoff was played in alternate shot of foursomes. It marked the first LPGA win for both Lee and M. And M said she might not have been able to notch her first victory without her playing partner. And now on to some motorsports, starting with NASCAR. This is from Saturday. Elliott ends his winless streak at home track. Chase Elliott passed Brad Keselowski in turn one on the final lap and won a wild, wreck-filled NASCAR Cup Series Quaker State 400 on Saturday night at Echo Park Speedway in Hampton, Georgia. After moving into second place with two to go, the number 9 Hendrick Motorsports Chevrolet driver, winless through 17 races, slipped below Keselowski's number 6 Ford and beat it to the checkers for his 20th career win and just his second in three seasons. The 7-time Most Popular Driver Award winner topped Keselowski by 0.168 seconds and earned a spot in NASCAR's 10-race postseason. Alex Bowman, Tyler Reddick, and Eric Jones completed the top five finishers. In the track's first race under its new name, Team Penske racer Joey Logano took the green flag and led 7 more Fords in the season's 18th race. Logano's number 22 led every circuit as Fords owned the top 6 positions through 25 laps, but the number 77 Chevrolet of Carson Hocevar was the biggest mover, climbing 23 spots to get to 4th on lap 27. The first caution on lap 35 for rain resulted in a nearly 15-minute red flag. Logano led the first 49 laps, but the first melee occurred on lap 57 as Christopher Bell lost control of his number 20 Toyota to trigger a wreck with Ryan Blaney, Bubba Wallace, Kyle Larson, and Austin Dillon. That ended the 60-lap stage one under caution with Austin Cindric as the winner. Fellow Fords driven by Keselowski and Logano trailed him. The third caution on lap 70 nearing turn 3 from about 8th on back created an even bigger mess. Denny Hamlin, Logano, Ross Chastain, Cindric, Hocevar, William Byron, and last week's winner Chase Briscoe all suffered major damage in the 23-car accident that brought out a second red flag. Stage 2, a 160-lap segment, produced the 1.54-mile tri-oval's best racing action that looked like recent finishes at the Super Speedway as a hornet's nest of drivers 10 deep fought for bonus points. At the end, a photo finish showed Reddick clipping Elliott for the maximum amount, while Chris Buescher, Bowman, and Jones rounded out the top five. With 34 laps left, 7th-place Justin Haley was tapped by Ty Dillon's number 10 in a single-car incident for the 10th caution to set up the finish. Their next race will be coming up Sunday, July 6th, the Challenge Round 2 at Grant Park 165. It's a Chicago street race in Chicago, Illinois, 75 laps, 165 miles. And over at NHRA Pro Series Drag Racing, Proc, Ashley, Reed, and Hall scoop up impressive Norwalk victories. Funny Car points leader Austin Proc won back-to-back races for the second time this year for John Force Racing, taking down Matt Hagen in the final round of the 19th annual Summit Racing Equipment NHRA Nationals on Sunday at Summit Motorsports Park. Justin Ashley in Top Fuel, Corey Reed in Pro Stock, and John Hall in Pro Stock Motorcycle also won the 10th of 20 races during the 2025 NHRA Mission Foods Drag Racing Series season. Proc went 4.064 seconds at 318.54 mile per hour in his Cornwell Quality Tools Chevy to slip past Hagen's 4.099 as the points leader earned his 4th win of the 2025 campaign. It is the reigning world champion's 16th career win, and amazingly, the 12th in the past 30 races since joining the Funny Car ranks at the start of the 2024 campaign. To reach the final round, Proc defeated Dale Creasy Jr., Bob Tasca III, and Ron Capps, setting up a marquee matchup with Hagen. The 4-time world champion left first, but Proc had enough to track him down and earn his first career victory at Summit Motorsports Park. Speaking of back-to-back wins, Top Fuel's Justin Ashley continues to roll as the young phenom picked up his 2nd consecutive victory, this time going 3.931 at 317.34 mile per hour in his Skag Power Equipment Dragster to hold off Clay Milligan in a thrilling championship round hole shot victory. In the first career win at Norwalk for Ashley, who has gotten red hot over the past couple of months, advancing to 6 final rounds at the past 7 races. He's now won consecutive races as well, pulling to within 77 points of points leader Tony Stewart. Ashley, who qualified number 1 for the first time this year, got past Scott Farley, Josh Hart, and Sean Langdon to reach the final round. Against Milligan, Ashley had an incredible 0.027 reaction time, which was just enough to hold off Milligan's solid run of 3.922 in a memorable hole shot victory for Ashley. In pro stock, Corey Reed picked up his first career NHRA win in a magical moment, taking down teammate Dallas Glenn in the final round with a run of 6.648 at 207.30 mile per hour in his J&A Service Camaro. Glenn had almost immediate tire shake off the starting line as Reed cruised to the victory in what was his 4th career final round. This will certainly be the most memorable, as Reed has made an incredible transition to pro stock ranks, switching from pro stock motorcycle to pro stock last year. He's shown tremendous potential and made big strides in a short time. To reach the final round, Reed defeated Troy Coughlin Jr., Greg Stanfield, and the number 1 qualifier, Greg Anderson. Pro Stock Motorcycles' John Hall waited nearly 12 years between wins, but the veteran got the job done on Sunday in Norwalk, chasing down Richard Gadsden in the championship round with a run of 6.880 at 196.67 mile per hour on his American Rebel Beer Buell. Gadsden left first with a standout 0.021 reaction time, but Hall had enough power to slip by at the finish line, recording his first victory since the U.S. Nationals at Indy in 2013. It's the veteran's 3rd career win, and this one will certainly be special. After qualifying 3rd and posting a series of solid runs in qualifying, Hall defeated Wesley Wells, Mark Igwersen, and points leader Gage Herrera to reach the finals. Herrera red-lit to hand the victory to Hall, who then got the best of the 2nd Vance and Hines rider in Gadsden to get the win. Their next race will be July 18th through the 20th, the Muckleshoot Casino Resort NHRA Northwest Nationals at Pacific Raceways in Kent, Washington. ITT IndyCar was off this past weekend. Their next race will be July 6th, the Honda Indy 200 at Mid-Ohio. Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course in Lexington, Ohio. And finally, in Formula One racing, Norris holds off Piastri to win F1 Austrian Grand Prix. In the week when the F1 movie hit theaters, Formula One delivered some real-life cinematic moments of its own. Teammates fought for the lead and came close to colliding as Lando Norris held off a race-long challenge from his McLaren teammate, Oscar Piastri, to win the Austrian Grand Prix on Sunday and lift his title hopes. Norris and Piastri battled for the lead early on, with the Australian briefly into the lead before Norris took the position back. A rash lunge by Piastri nearly caused a collision soon after. Piastri lost ground at the pit stops and was run wide into the grass by Alpine's Franco Colapinto while cutting through traffic. He soon made up ground on Norris, but couldn't get close enough to try another overtake. Over the radio, Norris called it a beautiful 1-2 finish for the team. Their next race will be July 4th through the 6th, the Formula One Qatar Airways British Grand Prix 2025 in Great Britain. And in a sad note from the horse racing world, Hall of Fame horse trainer D. Wayne Lucas dies at 89. Hall of Fame thoroughbred trainer D. Wayne Lucas, who guided 4 horses into the Kentucky Derby's winner's circle, died Saturday night in Louisville, Kentucky. He was 89. According to reports Monday, Lucas has been hospitalized with a severe infection and declined to go through the aggressive treatment plan doctors in Louisville had outlined, according to his family. Lucas had returned to his home and was under hospice care for the last week to spend his remaining days with his wife, Laurie, and an extended family that includes 2 grandchildren and 4 great-grandchildren. And now back to some NBA news. LeBron will not be a free agent this summer. This is by Jeff Zilgit of the USA Today. Los Angeles Lakers star LeBron James is exercising his player option for the 2025-26 season and will not become a free agent this summer, LeBron's agent Rich Paul told ESPN on Sunday. James is due to earn $52.6 million next season and has a no-trade clause in his contract. LeBron wants to compete for a championship, Paul told ESPN. He knows the Lakers are building for the future. In his 22nd season and at 40 years old in 2024-25, James averaged 24.4 points, 8.2 assists, and 7.8 rebounds and shot 51.3% from the field, 37.6% on three-pointers, and 78.2% on free throws. He made the All-NBA team for a league-record 21st consecutive time. James could have opted out of the final year of his 2-year $101.3 million contract, entered free agency, and signed a 3-year $175.3 million deal or a 2-year with the Lakers. He is nearing retirement and has not indicated how many more seasons he has left. He recently said, "I can't play that much further." The Lakers acquired star Luka Doncic from the Dallas Mavericks at the 2025 trade deadline and want to make a push for a title with James and Doncic on the roster for an entire season. We have just a few minutes left in this evening's sports today, so I will start with running down the standings in Major League Baseball. Starting with the American League East Division, the New York Yankees are on top at 48-35. Tampa Bay is a game and a half behind. Toronto 3 games, Boston 8, and Baltimore 12 games back. In the Central Division, Detroit is on top at 53-32. Cleveland is 11.5 games back. Minnesota 12.5, Kansas City 13.5, and the Chicago White Sox 24.5 games back. In the West Division, Houston is on top at 50-34 record, followed by Seattle 6.5 games back, the LA Angels 8.5, Texas 9, and the Athletics 17 games out. In the National League East, Philadelphia Phillies are on top at 49-35. A game and a half back are the New York Mets, followed by Atlanta 10.5 out, Miami 11 games, and Washington 14 games out of first. In the Central Division, the Chicago Cubs are on top at 49-35, followed 2 games back by Milwaukee, 2.5 by St. Louis, Cincinnati's 5 games back, and Pittsburgh 14.5 games out. And in the Western Division, the LA Dodgers are on top at 53-32, followed by San Diego 7 games back, San Francisco 7.5 back, the Arizona Diamondbacks are 11 games out, and finally the Colorado Rockies are 33.5 games out of first. And in basketball WNBA standings, Eastern Conference, New York Liberty are on top at 11-5. Atlanta is a half game back at 11-6. Indiana at 8-8, 3 games back. Washington 8-9, 3.5 back. Chicago Sky at 5-11, 6 games back. And Connecticut at 2-15, 9.5 games back. In the Western Conference, Minnesota is on top at 14-2. Followed by Phoenix, 2.5 back at 12-5, Seattle at 10-7, 4.5 back, Golden State, 9-7, 5 games back, Las Vegas, 8-8, 6 games back, LA Sparks, 5-12, 9.5 back, and Dallas, 5-13, 10 games out. And finally, in football specialists, Arizona become a kicker state. When sports fans think of football in Arizona, Kyler Murray and the Cardinals might come to mind, or maybe the rapid rise of Arizona State led by Kenny Dillingham and Sam Leavitt. However, a quieter revolution is taking shape, and it can be viewed through one perfectly placed kick at a time. Arizona is emerging as a breeding ground for elite kickers thanks to access to year-round training, specialized program, and a wave of young athletes embracing the craft. The state, known for its sweltering heat, may seem a less likely source of these specialist recruits than football powerhouses from Texas, Florida, and California, but it turns out that Arizona provides a perfectly unique set of opportunities for these athletes to thrive, in part because of a collection of talented kicking coaches. I study film, I study drills, I study each individual athlete's movements, says Steve Rausch, founder of Rausch Kicking, one of the top kicking programs in the state. It's what has allowed our specialists to develop at a level that I would honestly put up against anybody in any state across the country. Rausch, who kicked and punted for Arizona State from 1990 through 92, is making a name for himself in the Arizona kicking community as an insightful coach who has helped develop some of the nation's top special team players. And in a growing community, Alex Zanejas Jr., who previously kicked at the University of Arizona, is another prominent kicking coach in the Arizona specialist community. Along with his father, Alex Zanejas Sr., he founded AZ Kicking and Training, another top program in the state. He believes the mindset of collective improvement and competition has created a strong culture among local kickers. And that's going to wrap up tonight's edition of Sports Today for Tuesday, July 1st, 2025. I'm Russ Werner, tonight's host of Sports Today and a volunteer leader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Have a good evening and stay tuned for more. Don't forget, if you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org. Left-click on Broadcast Info and Audio. Then under Programming Links, left-click on Demand Podcast. Also, you can now listen to Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or other smart home device.